Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the CalcioLand podcast. And this episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, where you can play multiple Serie A fantasy football games. You can also stay up to date with the league with a lot of excellent writers, including frequent guests on the show, John Solano, Chloe Beresford, Enrico Passarella, as well as yours truly. So I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host, absolute Twitter superstar, Alex Goldberg. I'm actually going to take a look at how many Twitter followers Alex has as we start the podcast and to see how much it grows by the end of the show. Right now, Alex is over 21,000 followers. Let's see by the end of the podcast, if that rises even more. You're absolutely on fire, Alex. And today we're going to start previewing the Serie A season. So I have a couple of questions for you, buddy. And I asked these to my Twitter followers over the weekend. I think we're all in agreement. Juve's kind of on their own island. They are a team kind of on their own identity. But it's very interesting to try to predict what's going to happen after that. So I feel like Napoli and Roma are a good place to start. I feel like Roma's cycle, they're really into the Monchi revolution now, trying to go with young players. In the past 2 years, they've shed Totti and Nainggolan. They're going with a lot of young players. Napoli, by the same token, ended the Sarri cycle and are starting anew. So, Alex, between these two teams, which one do you think has the potential to take the biggest step back?
Who's going to take a bigger step back? I'm going to say it's going to be Napoli. Now, I'm definitely way higher on Napoli than I am on Roma, but Napoli had 91 points last year. That was incredible. They obviously lost Jorginho. They lost Maurizio Sarri. I still think Napoli's going to finish either third or fourth behind Juve and Inter. So I think Napoli's probably going to lose about 10, 11 points. I think they're going to be right around 80 points, maybe the high 70s, maybe the low 80s. So that's still a pretty big drop-off compared to what I think will happen with Roma. Roma had 77 points last year, as you said. I think they will be worse, but not a lot worse. Probably low 70s, maybe 72, 73, 74. So just mathematically, to answer your question, I do think Napoli will take a far their step back, but I still think they will be a lot better than Roma. David, that's my answer. What about you?
You know, Alex, I've been doing a lot of my preseason type research. I have to say, everything throws me off that there's still a transfer window. We have Roma trying to get Nzonzi, who I think would be a really good addition to their team. So maybe I've been a little bit too negative about Napoli. At the end of the day, they are bringing back the vast majority of a team that did really well. It's not that they're going with an unknown quantity at managers. So I'm gonna go with Napoli not taking a big of a step back. I think what's interesting to me is like Roma by design is almost saying we need to wait out Juve. We're not going to beat them anyway. I think we're seeing some teams in the NBA take that approach with the Warriors. So I think Roma by design is maybe saying, you know, and our friend Steve Cerruti had made a great point. Ultimately, finishing second or finishing fourth really makes no difference as long as you end up in one of those four spots. So it wouldn't surprise me if Roma looks at it more as, you know, let's just try to comfortably get to four. So that's my answer on that. I'm going to do my official predictions for the season on Thursday. I got a little bit more research to do. But here's another question that I have for you, Alex. And the way it's worded is very important. I did this on Twitter, and I have to wonder if everyone paid attention to the details. So last season, we had Inter finished with 72 points and Milan finished with 64. So let me ask you, of these two teams, which one do you think is going to have the higher point increase based on their transfer market and how they look going into the season compared to last?
Yeah, I definitely think Inter is going to take the higher point increase. As you said, they had 72 points last year. I have Inter at least improving by 3 wins, so 9 points. But honestly, maybe even 4 wins. So I have them in the low 80s, maybe even mid-80s points-wise. I don't think they're going to pull a Napoli, but I definitely think they've improved by about 3 or 4 wins. And I do think Milan have improved. 64 points last year, but I only think they've improved by maybe 2 wins and a draw, so 7 points. So at most, I really see Milan having 72 points like Inter did last year. So yeah, it's close in math, but I still think Inter is improving by at least probably a win over Milan. I like the direction Milan is going for sure, but I still think they're a team that really just needs to have some stability this year. In terms of making a quantum massive leap in points, I just don't necessarily think that's going to happen. And it's honestly, David, more about how damn good Inter is and how much they improved over the season. Of course, this is all just on paper, but I really do think it'll translate to the pitch. So, David, that's my opinion. What about you?
So, this is the way I look at it. If Inter wants to be a title contender, or at least be clearly the second best team, they have to go from 72 to the mid-80s. Like, keep in mind, last year, Napoli, 91 points was an incredible amount. Almost any season, that would be enough to win the title. But I think if Inter wants to take a leap, they have to get to the low 80s, mid-80s. So that's a big leap. But when you look at the additions they've made to the teams, that's significant. Now, here's a wild card. They're going to be in the Champions League. They weren't last season. Milan, on the other hand, to get to a Champions League spot, because that's their goal, I think at least finishing fourth. Last season, Inter finished fourth by getting to 72 points. So Inter's got to look at an 8-point increase. Inter, on the other hand, more than that. So I'm going to agree that Inter is going to have a bigger point increase, but I think Milan might get closer to their objective. Milan's also last season did play in the Europa League. They are used to playing on multiple competition. I think they have decent depth, especially based on their most recent moves. So I'm going to say that actually, so that's going to say Inter more points, but Milan's going to get closer to their objective. I think Inter could very likely still finish second, but I'm not so sure they're going to make that huge point leap. So we're going to preview the season even more on Thursday, but I wanted to start with these topics and get Alex's take.
Either way, it's very refreshing to talk about both of the Milans improving, and I'll say it again, that can only be good for Serie A. So David, we're going to add a segment in today. Let's talk about the best and the worst case scenarios for the top six in Serie A. And David, let's start with Juventus.
Okay, so I did a very similar column for Euro Fantasy Game. I hate previewing seasons while there's still transfer moves going on. So I'm going to like account for some potential variables. Now, I don't expect Juve to make any other moves. I think there might be just be some sales, maybe some players that aren't even on the squad currently, just to kind of balance their books a little bit more. So let's look at their best case scenario. Obviously, Ronaldo's been a marketing boom for them. Branding-wise, been a huge success. I think he's going to make a big difference in the Champions League, if anything, for the attitude that he brings. I don't think Ronaldo's ever going to take that pitch in a Champions League match, not thinking that his team is the clear favorite in a game. And I think that's going to have a huge impact on Juve. The other best case scenario is for Emre Can to kind of turn into a poor man's Vidal, someone that can bring muscle and dynamism to Juve's midfield, two qualities that they really lack. Last season, I remember Vidal, his first few seasons at Juve, it felt like he was everywhere on the pitch. Great at tackling, great at getting the ball back. Obviously, he had more of an offensive game than Emre Can, but I think if Vidal can bring the defensive aspect to it, he could be a massive upgrade. I also think Bonucci could really be a big help. There's been a lot of people pointing out how in Juve's midfield, it really is on Pjanic as a creative force. I think Bonucci is going to be really important for his passing ability. I really think, you know, Bonucci having issues with the fans, at Juve is grossly overstated. I really think, you know, we need to separate Twitter from real life. I think what you read on Twitter and real life are radically different realities. I think in Twitter, where a lot of people are in an echo chamber and people are like almost having a race to the bottom of who can say the most outrageous thing, while in real life, people get sucked into the moment. You know, you're at a big game. You know, Bonucci has a good performance, even just hearing his name on the PA. I really think that's grossly overstated, at least with Juve fans. Now, with Milan fans, he certainly could have done a lot better. Like, you know, he was the captain of the team and left pretending like nothing happened. But that aside, I think Bonucci could really help Juve. If you want to look at the best case scenario, I think him and Pjanic are really going to improve the passing game. Now, on the negative side, we don't know what Emre Can's going to be. It's certainly possible that people could literally confuse him with Khedira on the pitch because they look so much alike. And that wouldn't be a compliment. I think most Juve fans don't hold Khedira in high regard. And if fans start confusing Emre Can for Khedira, they could be in trouble. So we don't know how he's going to adapt to Serie A. On the other hand, CR7, fantastic addition, but Juve has historically always been about the group with no player being bigger than the group. That's always been Juve's way. Clearly not the case with Ronaldo. So let's see how the team adapts to having him. I almost think the team has to adapt to Ronaldo more than the other way around. And I guess there is the potential for Bonucci to bring drama in the locker room, although I think that's grossly overstated. The other reason for concern is we need to see how Cancelo adapts to Allegri. The right back position could still be an issue for Juve, at least in the short term. But I do expect Cancelo within a few months to really adapt and learn a lot. We're playing for Allegri.
And before we move on to the next team, I want to add just a best case scenario for Juventus, and I have to do it. What about if Juve get the Alexandro of 2 years ago? Then they're getting Alexandro and Ronaldo, and that is damn impressive. So, David, let's move on to the next team for the best and worst case scenario. Let's do Napoli.
So as I pointed out earlier, they just lost Jorginho. They brought back the rest of the team that got to 91 points. Fabian Ruiz could end up being a great replacement, certainly has the talent, and Fabian Ruiz could end up being a better fit for Ancelotti's system than Jorginho. The other thing is they have some young players that because of injuries or because of Sarri's lack of rotation could really take the next step. Zielinski especially. I mean, there is a reason why he has been compared to De Bruyne. Diarra, last season, I thought, took a step back. He could do much better under Ancelotti, and I think a healthy Milik could really be devastating. So there definitely is some upside with those players as well. Now, on the negative side, I really think Napoli needs Ghoulam to be healthy and for Ghoulam to go back to the way he played during the first half of last season. I'm kind of surprised they didn't go for another left back. Locks out there from Genoa, still available right now. I'm surprised there isn't a huge market, especially after his World Cup. But they need him to do well. We also talked about the potential hangover from not winning the title after getting to 91 points. Maybe bringing back so many of those players could prove to be a negative thing. Maybe some of those players haven't still recovered from Higuain's goal against Inter. And also you have to wonder if Sarri, you know, he had the opportunity to come back to Napoli and he felt the cycle was ending. He said, you know, I'll come back when we have to radically change the team. So you have to wonder if he was on to something. You know, it'd be very interesting to have a bet, you know, who's going to last longer, Sarri at Chelsea or Ancelotti at Napoli. That would actually be an interesting one. So maybe I've been a little bit too negative about Napoli, but I really do see a lot of potential red flags with this team.
Yeah, and I'll add a worst-case scenario for Napoli. And normally I hate doing this because this goes for any player, but imagine if Napoli lost Koulibaly for any extended period of time. Not only is he by far their best defender, but they may have got worse at goalkeeper, so that would really not bode well for them. Hopefully it does not.
Yeah, I think Koulibaly is the most irreplaceable player in all of Serie A. I'm with you 100% there. And you're right, look, it's not fair. You could take that almost any player, but like, Think about taking Ronaldo away from Juve. I think losing Koulibaly, much more devastating to Napoli.
Totally, totally agree. So, David, next Serie A team we'll do this for is Roma.
So, you know, we talked about it at the intro. I think Roma, by design, is saying, you know, we will take a step back to take two forward down the road. They still have, you know, great infrastructure of players. Dzeko still is sensational, number nine in Serie A. They do have some upside. They brought in some young players. You know, we've talked about Kluivert and Koric when we had John Solano on. But keep in mind, even the two young players they bought last season, and that's Kardorp and Schick, they barely got anything from those two. And I think there's plenty of reasons to think both those guys are going to have a big season. So I think there's definitely potential for a lot of upside for Roma. Those would be the reasons why I'd be optimistic. On the negative side, look, you know, two seasons in a row, a Roma keeper, it wildly exceeded expectations. Szczesny and Alisson, no one at the beginning of the season would have said he's going to be the best goalkeeper in Serie A, and he was. Maybe Olsen's going to be the same, but I have some reservations there. Could be a big drop off. Now, they have some young players that could be doing better, but Dzeko, De Rossi, and Kolarov could also take a step back. I thought especially Dzeko and Kolarov were sensational last season. Maybe Father Time catches up to them. The other thing is they invested a lot in Cristante, definitely has a lot of potential, but we've also seen some Atalanta players leave Atalanta and then really struggle. He could be the next installment in Gasperini Fool's Gold.
Roma's so interesting because theoretically, you mentioned the old players they have, but theoretically, if they just wanted to, at least maybe in a cup game, start at left wing Justin Kluivert, who has loads of potential. I'm not sure if he'll cash in on it. A Patrick Schick at striker, and then an Under at right wing. Potentially, of course, prospects are like a blank canvas, you always say it, but if all three of those filled out their potential at those positions, God, they would have a great future, but they're just such an unknown, in my opinion. So moving on, David. The next one we'll do is Inter.
So on the bright side, we always say in Serie A, the best defense usually wins. I think you can make a great case Inter has the best defense. I mean, maybe now with Bonucci back at Juve, it's close. But you have Skriniar. Miranda was really good in the second half of the season after struggling at the beginning. And De Vrij, that's a great trio of center backs. Spalletti can play all three at the same time. Or rotate. They're vastly improved at the wing back position with Vershalko and Asamoah. I think, you know, Brozovic and Gagliardini, you know, could really have a better season. Brozovic was very good to end the season, had an excellent World Cup. Gagliardini has another year of experience. Nainggolan could be energized from playing for Spalletti. They have a ton of options up front. I really love the addition of Kita Balde that gives them, you know, some flexibility with Lautaro Martinez, who had a great summer, not to rush him in. Politano now becomes a bench player with Kita potentially starting. Like, they have a great defense, very varied attack. I mean, on paper, Inter looks really, really strong. Now, on the flip side, as we pointed out at the top, last season, they weren't in the Champions League. So let's see how they adapt to competing on two competitions. I think potentially moving Asamoah to the midfield because it doesn't look like they'll get Modric, and we'll talk about it more in the questions. You know, could be a gamble. It seems like Dalbert has had a pretty good summer. They invested a lot in him last season. But to me, the idea of moving away Asamoah from left back, a position that Inter struggled for so long, it's kind of like paying Robin Peter to pay Paul. And then the other thing with Inter is, like, there's a lot of expectations with Inter. Usually not a good formula for the club. We've talked a lot about Pazza Inter. So, you know, in years past, there certainly wasn't nearly as much hype as Inter. Let's see how they handle that.
There certainly is a lot of hype behind Inter, that's for sure. So, David, now let's move on to the team that SMS is still currently on. Let's talk about Lazio.
So, look, I think Lazio, in usual fashion, had a great transfer window. I think Lazio's transfer window was so good that obviously losing Milinkovic-Savic, and that's certainly possible because, look, the transfer window closes in Serie A on Friday, but it's still open in Spain and France. He could have a market with PSG or with Real Madrid. I think the best compliment you can make to Lazio is if they lose Milinkovic-Savic, it wouldn't be that devastating to them. There's potential for a lot of their new additions to fit in really well. Badej has a lot of Serie A experience. Getting him on a free transfer could be a repeat of the Lucas Leiva deal. They brought in some players from abroad that have some upside. Dormisi, the left wing back they brought in from La Liga, could eventually replace Lulic maybe sooner rather than later. Correa, who they've brought in, has some Serie A experience. He'll help replace Felipe Anderson. There's a lot of upside for Berisha, the midfielder they brought in from Salzburg. So you got to like a lot of what Lazio has done. The reason, too, I say that they don't have to sell Milinkovic-Savic, they're in a position of strength, is they made a lot of money on Felipe Anderson, and they didn't break the bank to build the team. So after that. Now, on the negative side, De Vrij is a big loss. I think they've done a good job replacing him because they brought in Cáceres in the January transfer window, and Cáceres was really good at the World Cup. If he stays healthy, Cáceres is definitely a plus defender. They also brought in Acerbi from Sassuolo, a very consistent player. He'll play every minute. Not as good as De Vrij, not as fast. But, you know, definitely a solid player. You won't have injury concerns that you have with Cáceres, but you got to wonder if them combined is as good as De Vrij. But I think they could have done a lot worse replacing him. But De Vrij is a big loss, no way around it. And the other thing is you have to wonder if Immobile and Luis Alberto, who were absolutely sensational last season, if they can keep it up again another season. But in usual August fashion, I'm quite bullish on Lazio as usual. I like a lot of what they've done in the summer. So maybe I'm more bullish than them than most.
You know what? My developing take is I keep saying I don't think Napoli is going to be any worse than third. I'm starting to now think Napoli will be fourth and Lazio will be third. I really like Lazio. So, David, last one for the best and worst case scenarios. Let's do Milan.
So you can make a case that Higuain is the biggest upgrade at any key position for all the teams that we talked so far. And look, you know, obviously Ronaldo's a huge upgrade, but I would say going from Higuain to Ronaldo isn't as much as an upgrade as is less of an upgrade as going from Kalinic, Andres Silva, and Cutrone to Higuain. Like, Milan hasn't had a striker like this since Ibrahimovic. I think this is going to solve a lot of Milan's problems, is having him. So Higuain obviously is a certainty. He's a little bit of an older player. Milan also has a lot of young players. Last season, I think they had the youngest team in Serie A. There's plenty of reasons to think that those players are going to get better. Donnarumma didn't have a good season last year. There's a lot of reasons to think he's going to have a bounce-back season. He's not the only young player on Milan who could be better. I think a healthy Conti would be a great addition for Milan. So a lot of reasons, if you want to be optimistic for Milan, I can see why. Now, on the negative side, I think Gattuso, and we'll talk about him in the questions, compared to the managers of the other team, is less of a certainty. Let's see how that goes. If Milan wants to get back in the Champions League, they're going to have to pass two of the teams that we talked about so far. Not an easy order. I don't think it's impossible. It's far from impossible, but it's not that easy. I'm also curious to see how Caldara is going to live up to all the hype. Most of his career, he's played in a three-man back line with Gasperini. Now he's going to have to adapt to two-man defense with Romagnoli. So I think he definitely has a lot of talent. I'm a fan of his, but let's see how he adapts to the hype. So those are the best and worst case scenarios. On Thursday, I have a little bit more research to do. I'm going to give you my top six teams. I'm going to rank them. For now, chew on the best and worst case scenario. So one thing that we can always count on is our fantastic listeners sending us in questions for the podcast. You guys are essentially co-writers of the podcast. with me, as you always, if you want to send us in questions on transfers. We'll have one more episode dedicated to the transfer window, Serie A, music, TV, journalism. Please use the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, as you said, the Serie A transfer window ends this week. So who else do Milan need to sign before the window closes?
So I try not to take too seriously what sporting directors say about transfers publicly, but it was very interesting that when Leonardo was appointed at Milan, he said there's three positions that we're looking at: striker, midfield, and offensive winger. Higuain came in, Caldara essentially replaced Bonucci, so that really wasn't a need to fill. We have Bakayoko that arrived. We'll talk a little bit more about him in a second. And they're still lacking that offensive winger. Now, the player they've identified, Di Marzio had a report on this yesterday, is Villarreal's Castillejo. I saw our friend Matteo Bonetti is very excited by this potential move. He wrote he's exactly the type of winger that would make Milan better. Interestingly, in the deal with Villarreal, Milan's trying to include Carlos Bacca, who was there on loan last season. Although Bacca's a Milan fan, he's made it very clear he wants to stay in Spain. Let's see if Milan can include him in the deal. At the moment, Villarreal is asking for $25 million in straight cash. So let's see if that happens. Now, I've had a lot of people ask me about Milan's interest in Milinkovic-Savic. So, you know, look, this transfer window has taught me that logic and trying to put too much reason into transfers is going to backfire, because we've seen time and time again transfers that on the surface didn't seem to make sense happen. So with that caveat, let me give you the reasons why I'm very skeptical. A, Milan has to respect financial fair play parameters. Both Mirabelli and Fassona before they left, and Leonardo recently said that Milan essentially has to break even. So to get Milinkovic, and look, they brought in Bakayoko on loan. They brought Higuain on loan with option to buy. They sold Locatelli, which essentially pays for the loan part of Higuain. So they have to be very careful financially. So Milinkovic-Savic, as I pointed out, Lazio doesn't have to sell him. They made enough money on Felipe Anderson to finance the rest of their transfer market. So Lazio's sitting pretty. They're like, you want Milinkovic-Savic, you have to bid over $100 million. So Milan would have to raise that money somehow. I guess they could sell Donnarumma and Suso. This late in the window, I'm not sure how realistic that is. Now, I guess if you're a Milan fan, you can say, well, maybe Lazio would accept a loan with option to buy deal similar to Higuain. Let's think about that for a second. Essentially, Lazio would have to agree to that, and they would be making a team that's competing with them for a Champions League spot that much better without getting the return that they want from Milinkovic-Savic. So again, I'm just looking, those are the factors that I would look at, but time and time again, I've looked at factors that then really didn't matter. I think it would be fantastic for Milan to land Milinkovic-Savic. It would be incredible for Serie A for him to go to a team that has a much better chance of keeping him long-term than, say, Lazio. So I would love for this to happen, but what I think the outcome of all this is going to happen is Milinkovic-Savic going to get a raise before the season starts. There's still a couple of weeks in the transfer window in Spain and England. Maybe Lotito waits to see if one of those clubs, Real Madrid or PSG, makes a big offer. So that's kind of how I see that situation. But I really want to stress to Milan fans, you should be really thrilled with how the transfer window has gone so far. Even Strinic, who arrived on a free transfer, he had a good World Cup. He could bring good depth. I think Higuain, like I mentioned, is the biggest upgrade at any position for the top teams. I think Caldara's age fits in perfectly. So just because if Milinkovic-Savic doesn't come and Inter's been active, don't let that take away from the fact Milan should be very happy with how things are going.
All right. Staying on Milan, David, how do you think my good friend Bakayoko will fit in at Milan?
So I was thinking about this, and one player that Milan really missed last season was Kučka. You know, the former defensive midfielder was kind of like a tank and went to play to Turkey. I think it's completely realistic to think that Bakayoko could at least give you that. I think, you know, Kessié was kind of the only midfielder with some muscle and some real grinta in that midfield. I think Gattuso could try to channel his grinta into him. So I think this is a good move. I mean, I really see no downside for Milan. They brought him in on loan with option to buy. If he has a great season, maybe they consider keeping him next season. For Chelsea, it's a good move. He wasn't going to fit in with Sarri. His value was only going to plummet even further. If anything, his value could stabilize. So I think Kuchka's kind of a good baseline for him, for what Bakayoko could bring. And that's something that Milan really needs.
Just two quick thoughts on the situation with Bakayoko. One, I think in order to get a good season out of him, things will need to be simplified right away. I think Gattuso should not put too much on his plate. He really looked overwhelmed a lot last year when Antonio Conte asked him to pretty much do the same job as N'Golo Conte when they would be the pivot in the midfield. And two, just one thing to remember, Milan fans. Bakayoko, not too long ago, was pictured in an Inter Milan kit. So that should be interesting. So, David, moving on, let's stay on Milan. If Milan bring in Milinkovic-Savic next summer, it would cost them $135 million to keep him, Higuain, and Kessié. Is that good business or madness?
Well, look, you know, we're seeing more and more of these loan deals. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for it. For the buying club, that's usually you're spreading out the cost of the player over multiple years. For some clubs, it's getting around sounds like it's shady, and maybe it is a little bit, to avoid getting in trouble with financial fair play. And look, what I think in general is that fans are too focused on the future, like maybe focus more on just the upcoming season instead of being worrying about what's going to happen 2-3 years down the road. And look, you know, this is a hypothetical, but if they got Milinkovic-Savic on a loan with option, had to pay Higuain and Kessié, at least those are three quality players. You're not, you know, paying it for some crap. So I think, you know, this is the wave of the future, these loan deals. It gives clubs a lot of flexibility. For the selling club, loaning someone out, it avoids you taking a loss on the amortized value, which has all sorts of negative implications for the books. So I think fans just need to get used to more of these. And my advice is focus more on the short term. Don't worry so much of what's going to happen a year from now.
All right, David, how about this? Who will Milan regret more? Andre Silva or Locatelli?
So you mentioned it earlier, then people that listen to the podcast know that I'm old and cranky. I don't really get that excited about prospects that much anymore. I feel like young players really are a blank canvas. Any fan can project whatever they want on them. There's not that much track record to back it up. And the way I see it with Andre Silva and Locatelli, I think a very important factor is these are two young players that had two managers at Milan, and neither of them really gave them a lot of regular playing time. I think that says a lot. It's not just one manager, and I think Montella and Gattuso were really pretty different philosophically, and neither of them played a lot. And the other thing too is, quite frankly, it's not like they were competing against like really great players. So Locatelli's competition was Biglio at a very difficult season in Montolivo. It wasn't exactly Rijkaard, Albertini, and vintage Pirlo. Andre Silva, on the other hand, was competing against Kalinic. It was absolutely dreadful. Cutrone definitely had his moments, but the opportunities were there for Andre Silva. And, you know, a lot of the fans say, oh, you know, the manager wasn't playing him in the match. But guess what? A player has to earn that usually in practice. We had Montella and Gattuso, especially Montella, who was under a lot of pressure to keep his job. He didn't see enough, obviously, from them to play. I just don't get that excited about young players. I remember when Juvic, after the Calciopoli scandal, when they were back in Serie A, they had a really good youth team. They often won the big tournament in Viareggio. You know how many of those youth team players from Juve made it to the top club? Zero. The one guy that Juve really developed is Immobile, and he never actually played for the team. So I just don't get that excited. I feel, you know, for every Donnarumma, there are hundreds of Mastur types that kind of get lost around the way. And the last point I wanted to make on Locatelli and Andres Silva, from a transfer market standpoint, what's interesting about them is that, once again, youth team players that a club develops, like Locatelli, are very valuable on the transfer market because when you sell them, there's really no fee to amortize. So Milan's going to get a good return on Locatelli along with forced option to buy plus bonuses. They could make 14 million pure profit on Locatelli. Andres Silva, on the other hand, the young player that they invested a lot to acquire, they had to loan him out because there was no way his transfer value was what his amortized value was left, which was around 30 million. So they ended up sending him on loan with option to buy. So that's just really the interesting distinction between young players, self-grown versus bought. It's just interesting how it impacts teams' plans on the transfer market.
All right, David, last one on Milan. What do you think about Gattuso's tactical acumen or lack thereof?
You know, it's an interesting storyline because I see a lot of Milan fans. Some, you know, love Gattuso, and I think it's some of the older ones because of what he represents to the club. Maybe younger Milan fans point out to his potential lack of tactical acumen. And it's interesting because, you know, obviously you associate Grinta, hard work, on Gattuso. One thing that he really wanted to improve at Milan was the athletic condition. Because with Montella, that certainly wasn't something that was valued. And we definitely saw some improvements towards the end of the season. So these are more about effort and intangibles. So those seem to be the things that are most associated with Gattuso. So I'm curious to see how that's going to translate with him growing. I think in a lot of ways, we said a lot of these same things about Conte when he was starting out at Juve. Then I think, you know, taking off the last season at Chelsea, which was dreadful, I thought Conte actually really developed into a really good coach tactically. I'm curious to see if Gattuso has kind of the same evolution. I think the one thing that helped Gattuso, kind of like Conte, is he played for a lot of great managers. So long and short of it, I think Gattuso definitely earned the right to start the season with Milan. I want to see if he's improved tactically. It seems there wasn't too much of a game plan last season, but I think he's so early in his career that he definitely deserves the benefit of the doubt.
All right, David, let's move to the other Milan. Let's move to Inter Milan. Inter have acquired numerous players on options to buy that add up to around 90 million. Will they be able to keep most of them?
It's a very interesting question. And again, I go back to what I said earlier. Let's not worry so much about the future. Let's worry about the season coming up. But, you know, as I was getting ready for this question, it dawned on me last season, Inter acquired Cancelo on loan with option to buy, and later Rafinha on loan with options to buy. And when they clinched that Champions League spot and they had that revenue, I almost assumed that it was a lock that they would keep at least one of the two, if not both, with that revenue. And guess what? They end up keeping neither. Now, maybe Rafinha comes in at the end of the window, but Cancelo went to Juve. But then look at the flip side. Inter essentially replaced Cancelo with Vrsaljko, and they replaced Rafinha with Nainggolan. It's a pretty good trade-off. I'm not sure it's an upgrade. I definitely think it's very comparable. So it's hard to say if they're going to be able to keep a lot of the players that they bring in on loan with options to buy. But it's really for a club like Inter who has financial fair play to worry about. You're basically kicking the can down the road for the payments, and it gives you options. You know, it's certainly possible that next summer they're going to get some other players to replace them. Now, the difference, what they've done a lot this year is for a lot of the loans with options to buy that they did, is they paid significantly for the loan. Because of accounting, they couldn't even put it as a forced option to buy, because that wouldn't help with financial fair play. But they're thinking, their selling point to the player that they acquired and the selling club is, look, we're giving you so much money up front for the loan that we're essentially guaranteeing ourselves that we have to redeem him, because if not, we threw that money out the window almost. But again, I wouldn't underestimate how important it is for one season. So let's see what happens with Keita, Politano, players like that they brought in on loan with option to buy.
All right, David, one more on Inter. Should Inter buy another midfielder if they can't acquire Luka Modric?
Yeah, so we're recording this on Monday. The update on Modric is Real Madrid selected him for the Super Cup match against Atletico. He's traveling with the team. At this point, I think it's highly unlikely he'll join Inter, but I can't blame him for trying. I was chatting with my colleagues on Di Marzio's site last week, and Gabriele, who's really, really good, he said, you know, Ronaldo is both the reason I'm most optimistic for Modric and also the most pessimistic. Like, if Modric, you know, was really pushing to join Inter and there's the gentleman agreement, maybe Real Madrid will just start a new cycle. And on the flip side is after losing Ronaldo, they can't lose Modric. And that seems to have been the driving point. So that aside, you know, should Inter sign another midfielder? It feels in a lot of ways that it was either Modric or bust. They were like, you know, we'll make a sacrifice to bring him in. If you look at the rest of Milan, of Inter's midfield, let's go with Nainggolan, Gagliardini, and Brozovic being the starters. They have Vecino as a backup, and which the transfer window being closed in England, he won't be going to Chelsea. They still have Borja Valero, and they still have João Mario. Now, I think João Mario, I seriously doubt he's coming back. Borja Valero is basically almost done. So they are a little bit thin. They could move Asamoah to the midfield. There have been some encouraging signs with Dalbert in preseason. But even with Asamoah there, I think they need to add someone else. I could see Rafinha coming back from Barcelona. He fit in quite well. And it will be interesting to see if Barcelona is willing to do another loan with option to buy deal, because that's really the only formula Inter can do.
All right, David, how about this one? Which of the players that Juve sold with a buyback clause is more likely to eventually return to Turin?
So Mandragora, I think, is the answer a lot of people would give. Juve got 20 million for him. To bring him back, it would cost them 26. Now, I'm not sold that Mandragora is really good enough to be a starting caliber player at Juve. It could end up him being kind of like Sturaro if he comes back barely playing. I see Mandragora as more as a financial asset for Juve, and they made a significant profit on him. The one that I would look at is Favilli at Genoa. It was really good for Juve on the U.S. tour. They sold them for a cheap price, not surprising. That was the flip side of the pity into Juve so cheap. Juve does have a buyback clause on him. I could see that. The other one is Moise Kean. I really think he'll be sold with an option, with a buyback option before the window closes. He's been linked to Nice, Borussia Dortmund. Maybe some clubs in the Dutch league, Raiola, can get him there. So I'd bet on Moise Kean of all the players. I think financially it makes sense for Juve to cash in on him, but as long as they keep a buyback clause, I think he has the talent to eventually return. It'd actually be a lot of fun to see him on Nice, because Balotelli is his idol. Someone asked me if Balotelli to Serie A is still likely. I doubt it. Parma's now out of the mix. They're going for other strikers. I have a feeling he's going to end up at Marseille, but we could see Moise Kean replace him at Nice, and that would be quite intriguing.
All right. I promise I did not send in this next question myself. Maurizio Sarri wanted to bring Gonzalo Higuain to Chelsea, but the club's policy isn't to sign older players. David, could this be a problem moving forward?
I don't. And I go back to this, that Sarri just historically is a manager that doesn't care that much about the transfer window. His attitude is, give me the players that you bought and sold and I'll manage that. I think he's kind of been drawn in the middle of this with Courtois, Hazard to a certain extent. And he had that quote that he would have liked to have Higuain, but it didn't work out. So, I don't expect that. While we're on that, Alex, I had to ask you real fast, what was your impression of the first match for Sarri at Chelsea?
First of all, very surreal to see him in the Premier League on the touchline after watching him last year at Napoli. I was impressed. I mean, I know it was only Huddersfield, but to win 3-0 regardless in this short, short time of integrating this system, of course, it's not even close to integrated, but the fact that they still managed to get 3 goals in their first performance under him, I was impressed. And the last part, this is not me being overly biased, but Eden Hazard under Maurizio Sarri is going to be downright graphic. He came on for about 14 minutes and looked absolutely unplayable. So I honestly cannot wait. I think it's going to be a really fun season for Chelsea fans. So, David.
Yeah, I think Jorginho is a home run. I think he's already one of the smartest players in all of the Premier League. I think he's going to be an absolute home run.
Yeah, I think him with Naby Keita on Liverpool, those might have been the top acquisitions in the Premier League the whole summer. So, David, how about this? Let's do one more on football. Who will be the first manager sacked in Serie A?
And that's a tough question. So, on the top teams, I think Gattuso, but I think he's going to do better than people think. When I'm looking at the rest of the table, I'm looking at the lower tables. The lower table, it's usually the first ones to go. I could see Spal manager Simplici. It's going to be a tough race to avoid relegation. The newly promoted teams are quite good. We have Chievo's manager, Danna, who they brought in towards the end to replace Maran. I could see him being on the hot seat rather quickly. And Udinese has had a lot of turnover at the manager position. Their new manager is Velasquez. Let's see how long he lasts. I also could see Pioli, because there's a lot of expectations at Fiorentina after the end of their transfer window. So those are my candidates for it so far.
All right, David. Last Twitter question, period. We're moving away from football. How do you rate the TV show Oz?
So it's a very good question. So Oz, for those of you that aren't that familiar, was the first TV series on HBO. I think it was the first season from like a cable, so not a broadcast network, a premium cable company, so they could have cursing, violence, things you normally wouldn't see on TV. And Oz was definitely took advantage of being able to have violence and really extreme content. It takes place in a prison. Thought it was an excellent season. I think it lost steam by the third and fourth season, but the first two were excellent. I think, you know, without Oz, there's no way we would have had The Sopranos and The Wire as we had them. They really established what a TV show could do. Their head writer, Tom Fontana, had worked on Homicide: Life on the Street, which was a very influential TV show before. A lot of the actors in Oz have also been featured in the Wire after. Carmela Soprano, the actress Edie Falco, was on it too. So really well acted, very gritty, a fantastic TV show. It loses steam a little bit towards the end, but a lot of really good characters, and I recommend it. So I want to thank everyone who sent in questions. We love our listener support. If you're on your iPhone listening to us, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Please subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends about it. And we're going to end the podcast with our friend Thousand Names live from Italy. We're going to make some predictions for the season. We'll be back on Thursday to further preview Serie A. And I look forward to chatting with you then. Okay, and with the Serie A season upon us, we're recording this on Monday. The first game is on Saturday. We're previewing the season this week, and we could not have a better guest to predict what's going to happen during the season than our oracle, the fantastic Thousand Names, live from Italy. He's currently in Naples right now. We're gonna make some predictions for Serie A, the Scudetto, the top four teams, and the Capocannoniere. So without further ado, Thousand, bentornato a Calcioland. È un vero piacere averti sul programma.
Il piacere è mio, è come stare in famiglia con voi.
All right. So Thousand says it's like being family. It's like being at home on the podcast, and that's exactly how I feel upon having him on the show. Allora, Thousand, parliamo dello Scudetto. La Juve ha aggiunto Ronaldo, avevano già vinto 6 campionati di fila. Dacci il tuo pronostico per lo Scudetto. So, we're going to preview the title race first. I mentioned that Juve is coming off 6 titles, wins in a row, and now they have Ronaldo. So, Thousand, qual è il tuo pronostico per lo Scudetto?
La Juventus vincerà l'ottavo scudetto consecutivo perché è nettamente più forte delle altre. L'unico ostacolo può essere un calo di motivazioni, no? Perché la squadra potrebbe concentrarsi sul grande obiettivo che è la Champions, però diciamo che a margine sulle altre.
Okay, so it goes to show Juve has won so often that I forgot that this is 7 in a row. So Fausen points out that they are going to win the 8th title. He says they are clearly stronger than the other teams, but the only thing that could get in their way is a lack of motivation. Juve essentially is going to have to beat themselves. So I'm going to agree with that take. Not a hard one to do. I think now it gets a little bit more complicated. So let's talk about who's going to finish second, third, and fourth automatic bids for the Champions League spot. So, Fausen, parliamo della corsa per la Champions League. In che ordine hai le squadre per secondo, terzo e quarto?
Metto Inter seconda, Napoli terza e Roma quarta. L'Inter ha fatto un buon mercato, però molti giocatori sono da valutare col doppio impegno, visto che dopo tanti anni finalmente disputerà la Champions. Il Napoli ha mantenuto la rosa dell'anno scorso, però a parte Jorginho ha perso soprattutto Sarri, e quindi bisogna vedere come la squadra reagirà agli schemi di Ancelotti. La Roma ha perso il suo miglior giocatore della passata stagione, Alisson, e quello di 2 anni fa, Nainggolan, prendendo giocatori di basso livello o giovani promettenti. Però ancora conserva ancora dei giocatori forti, Osasio, Manolas, De Rossi, e quindi io credo sia resti più forte di Lazio e Milan, che vedo quinta e sesta.
Interesting. So, Fausen, I don't think this is a hot take, as Inter as the second best team. He points out that they had a very good transfer window, but the X factor with them is we have to see how their players are going to adapt to playing in the Champions League as well. Last season, he didn't say it, but I'll add it, last season, Inter clinched the 4th place spot at the last match in the last minute. They had no other competition to focus on, so let's see how they adapt. He has Napoli 3rd. He points out that the only significant player they lost is Jorginho, but they lost Sarri, which could be a big loss as well. And some interesting points on Roma, who he has 4th, is that for 2 years in a row, they've lost their best player. So he pointed out that they lost their 2 best players for the past 2 seasons. So Alisson, sensational last year, and Nainggolan as well, and they've replaced them with a lot of young players. Olsen isn't a young player, but he's an unknown quantity. But although, you know, Roma might take a step back, he still thinks they have a solid enough base to be ahead of Lazio and Milan. I have to say, I'm very undecided on 3rd and 4th. I'm going to wait till Thursday. I got to do a little bit more research, but that's Thousand's prediction. So for the tops of the standings, we have Juve, Inter, Napoli, and Roma. So that's what our Oracle has. Now, Thousand, let's go to the Capocannoniere. This is a very interesting race. We've had some strikers that have scored a lot of goals in the past few years, and now we have Ronaldo in the mix. Allora, Fausen, per la corsa al capocannoniere, come la vede?
Cristiano Ronaldo è una macchina da gol, da potenziali, potenzialmente a 40 in Serie A, ma quante partite giocherà? Io credo che Allegri lo preserverà sia all'inizio che soprattutto poi nelle sfide precedenti la Champions, e quindi arriverà facile a 20, però non lo vedo motivato per vincere la classifica cannonieri. E la mia scommessa è Higuain, perché il Milan non fa la Champions e quindi lui giocherà tutte le partite in una squadra in cui è l'unica stella, e quindi sarà un po' come il Milan, come il Napoli di Sarri, lui è il centro del progetto. Mentre Icardi e Immobile pure arriveranno a 20 gol, però lo vedo dietro, non credo che se il Capocannoniere si vinca a 30 gol e loro quest'anno non ci arrivino.
E cosa mi dici di Belotti? Pensi che riuscirà a tornare in forma come 2 anni fa?
Sì, mi aspetto una grande stagione di Belotti, mi aspetto il riscatto di Belotti, che è l'attaccante ideale di Mazzarri, e se non avrà infortuni l'anno prossimo potrà riscattare la passata stagione.
Okay, so here's the analysis for the highest goal scorer in Serie A. Thousand points out that while Cristiano Ronaldo is a scoring machine who could potentially even get to 40 goals in Serie A, the question is how many games is he going to play? It's certainly possible. Allegri, who does like to rotate quite a bit, before Champions League matches that maybe Ronaldo isn't going to play some of those games before a big Champions League game. And another thing that Thousand pointed out that usually, and this is certainly true in Serie A, the team with the highest goal score doesn't necessarily win the title, and Juve is the clear favorite there. So Thousand's pick, and I think this is a very good one, is Higuain to lead Serie A in a goal scored. He thinks that Milan's going to be, really their whole goal is going to be to play for Higuain. It's going to be a little bit similar to the great season Higuain had with Sarri. So that's his pick for leading Serie A in goal scored. He also expects a big season from both Immobile and Icardi, who will get to at least 20 goals. And I asked him about Belotti, who I see kind of as a wild card, and Thousand expects a bounce-back season for him. So our Oracle's back. I'm thrilled to have him. As usual, we're going to have our game picks on Thursday's show with Thousand Names. I'm going to pick games with him. We're going to keep track of them. It should be fun. We'll make it interactive with our listeners. Allora, Thousand, grazie mille. Sono molto contento di riaverti sul podcast. Ci sentiamo giovedì per i pronostici delle partite. Grazie mille per il tuo intervento.
È un piacere e buon calcio a tutti.